Online learning is a new reality for parents, students, and teachers across South Florida. Is it working? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Schools are closed, but the learning doesn't stop. Students are at home learning online, and this is a big challenge for teachers and parents.
At one of my schools, the majority of parents don't speak English, so communication over the phone is difficult.
How long will students have to continue their education from home? We have a panel of teachers to talk about the new reality of education, and you can share your story with us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Also, the new Tropic newsletter keeps a lot of Miamians informed with the latest cultural news. How do we stay engaged with local arts, music, and culture from home? The director of the new Tropic joins us to give you a few tips of fun stuff to enjoy from your couch. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Many parents, teachers, and students in South Florida have started an unprecedented experience. As social distancing rules remain in place at least through the end of April, schools will continue teaching remotely. Online communication has already proven difficult. One of the platforms used by districts throughout the state crashed on Monday. Some sites are currently working to build out capacity for the millions that will be using them. Parents, students, and teachers, we want to hear from you. What has the experience of remote learning been like so far? Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial and share your story. We're joined now by WLRN's education reporter, Jessica Bakeman. Jessica, always great to have you.
Thanks, Lewis.
And joining us, too, are a couple of teachers. Stephen Bax, he teaches history at Hialeah Gardens High School. Stephen, great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also Sarah Lerner, she's an English and journalism teacher and yearbook advisor at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Sarah, great to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica, I want to start with you. Schools have a plan for hurricanes. We also, sadly, now have an idea of how to run a school after it's experienced a mass shooting. But was there ever a plan on how to teach all the students when schools have to shut down?
I don't think anyone was planning for a global pandemic, unfortunately. But we've seen school districts sort of figure this out at different speeds. The Miami-Dade County School District, really weeks before some of the other districts were talking about a plan, had already put together what they call an instructional continuity plan. So it's basically, okay, here's what happens in each grade at each subject. Here are the resources that we have online that we can use to continue doing lessons. And then, you know, all of the other districts in the state have pretty much had to do the same thing, put together a plan for as long as possible. You know, and it's definitely a combination of a lot of different things. Like you have, in some cases, teachers are doing office hours for 3 hours a day. So during that period of time, parents and students are able to contact teachers and try to get answers to questions if they're having trouble. You have situations where teachers are sometimes teaching a live class in front of students that are connected via video. And, you know, of course, there are all these different kinds of programs for doing activities and assignments.
And I remember, too, that before they decided to close the schools, that the superintendents were trying to get a sense of how many of our students are going to need computers, are going to need the equipment to be able to now go and learn online. Did they get that number? Did they figure out what it was? And did they have enough equipment for everybody?
I don't think we quite know the answer to that yet. I haven't heard any school districts say we've run out of devices and we don't have enough, but I've certainly heard a lot from anecdotally from parents and students and teachers saying, you know, either a school ran out of devices and then, you know, maybe if a parent was out of school that day to pick up a device, it wasn't available. And then the school district shifted some more devices from a different school where maybe they had a surplus to that other school, but maybe there was not, you know, communication with the parents to let them know. Now we have more devices at the school. I've also heard about, you know, families who have multiple children who are working with one device. So the children have to switch off. But I know that the Broward County School District and the Miami-Dade County School District have each said that they've distributed something like 80,000 devices each. And, you know, in Miami-Dade, they're also distributing smartphones that have Wi-Fi internet hotspot capabilities to high school students to help them with internet connectivity.
Right. Okay, no. Looking at how to, again, make sure that all students have access to being able to learn online. Let me go over to my teachers real quickly. Stephen, what did the district tell you? What was the conversation like, or what did they tell you about getting ready for switching to, you're going to have to teach the students from home?
Well, they basically, we talked about it about a week maybe 2 weeks before everything went down. And then we had to get together with an emergency faculty meeting the week that they canceled classes. And we said, okay, well, on Friday of that week, the final day, we sent all students to every class. We have 8 classes. Normally it's 4x4. And so we sent the students with a worksheet we had printed out for them. And for every teacher, they had to write down how they would have connectivity with that particular teacher. I'm using mainly Edmodo, but I'm now starting to use Microsoft Teams, and I'm branching out a little bit to make it a little bit
Does it matter which one you use? Do they tell you you have to use certain ones?
No, not at all. Whatever works best. Most of us already use some sort of connectivity for homework assignments and that sort of thing. And so we're just expanding upon that.
Yeah.
Sarah, the next 2 days, they're training us on how to use more programs.
Okay. Sarah, what about you? Did you get enough information? And what are you using? What's the platform that you're using?
Well, I'm using Edmodo as a site. I have a computer of my own. I have 2 sons that are also Miami-Dade County Public School students. And unfortunately, their computer died right after school let out. It completely crashed.
Sarah,
so I had to get a new one. So we're using 2 among the 3 of us.
Okay. Sarah, do I have you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, Sarah, what about you? What are you using? And, I mean, what kind of help did you get from the district?
The district is mandating that we all use Canvas, which I utilize anyway, but certainly not at the capacity that I'm using it now. There was training available online. We did not have the opportunity to send our students around like Stephen. As of Friday the 13th, the district held a press conference that students would not be returning, but we were told that we had to go in the following week. And then the Broward Teachers Union stepped in on our behalf, and that decision was reversed. So teachers haven't been at school since we all left on the 13th. So there are teachers who may have resources at home. There are teachers who may not. I'm doing the best I can with my high school students. This week, we are finishing out the 3rd quarter, and we will start the 4th quarter on Monday. So this week is just like a cleanup catch-all week,
right,
with actual instruction starting Monday. But it's a mess. I spend the bulk of my day answering emails and responding to student texts through Remind 101. And you know, they're asking me questions and I'm answering them as best that I can, but there is no plan in place.
You know, yeah, I wanted to get a sense of how exactly is class operating. I mean, it's, you know, you meet with your students because usually you have them in the classroom, you have your curriculum and you take tests and you do assignments. But,
right.
You know, what's happening now exactly? Is there a class or you're just giving them assignments?
So like Jessica said, we have office hours, quote unquote office hours, and that's 3 hours a day. And we are also on a 4x4 block schedule. So we've got periods 1 through 4 one day and 5 through 8 the next. So on one of the days, my 3 hours of office hours are split with an hour and a half where I can do live instruction and, you know, interactive things with my students, and the other hour and a half is simply for responding to emails. There was a big district pushback against using Zoom. The irony, of course, is that the superintendent said that we teachers were not allowed to use Zoom while he himself was on a Zoom call explaining that. And the district or the teachers union pushed back, and we were allowed to utilize Zoom if we see fit. And I have found, and I've only used it with my yearbook staff, but I have found that it has been incredibly helpful to
okay.
as a way to interact with students.
I see. Stephen, same with you. I mean, you have office hours. Are you meeting with students independently or as a group? How do you help them?
Right now what I'm doing is it's through email, it's through Edmodo. Now what I'm doing is I'm going through the training on Zoom and other types of video conferencing because a lot of teachers are using it to great effect. My classes right now are rather essay heavy. They do write a lot of essays. It's a history class, but it's through Cambridge University in England. And so I have to assign them a lot of essays, and I'm still doing that at home. The hardest part is peer review, and I'm going to have to pair them up where they grade one another. They seem to learn a lot more from it then. But we're still up in the air as to whether or not or how they're going to get a grade for that test that they're supposed to take, and there's scholarship implications to that.
Right, exactly. Again, we're talking with teachers right now about learning from home. All schools are shut down, and so everybody now is having to keep that distance from each other. We're all still practicing, you know, that social distancing, which means, of course, students are at home. They're having to learn from home. And we're talking with teachers about how that communication works. We've heard from Alexandra Chase. She's a gifted teacher at two Miami-Dade elementary schools, one in Alapata, one in Liberty City. We're not using the names of the schools to protect your students' privacy. She's been teaching for 19 years, and she shared with us how she's dealing with online teaching.
The first week, I had only had one student whose parent reached out to me through email. None of these students have started any assignments, and I'm not sure that they know how. The hardest thing about distant learning is the not knowing. I wish I knew my students were safe, not hungry, and handling this together with their family. At one of my schools, the majority of parents don't speak English, so communication over the phone is difficult, especially because of my limited Spanish. I wish I would have been able to have a little bit of a head start so I could walk them through the entire process of, and how to get a hold of me no matter what.
Jessica, I'm wondering what you're hearing from teachers, but you know what their issues are, their challenges. Are the districts listening and able to actually help them at this point?
So I know that the school districts are running helplines where teachers or students or parents, whoever, are able to call in and sort of troubleshoot and get help. I think it's important to remember that these school districts are really big. There are tens of thousands of teachers, hundreds of thousands of students, and you know everyone's kind of struggling through this. So I wouldn't want to say, yes, the school districts are solving every problem, but I also wouldn't want to suggest that we could expect them to solve every problem. You know, hopefully things start to get a little bit more organized and a little bit more normalized as we go forward. But right now it's just everyone's trying to figure this out at the same time. And, you know, it's interesting when we talk about Canvas and Edmodo and all of, and Zoom and all of these platforms that, you know, were supplemental before to classrooms or to workspaces and are now being used as, you know, a primary mode of communication and delivering instruction. And, you know, they're having to figure out how to scale up so that they can handle the demand pretty much overnight, you know. So I think a lot of that should be kept in mind. And I think teachers and parents and school district administrators are keeping that in mind to the extent they're understanding that this isn't going to go perfectly.
Yeah. Stephen, you just mentioned a moment ago, one of the challenges is that you let the students peer review each other, and
yeah,
that's a little bit of, but what's another challenge you're facing right now that you're trying to get around?
The biggest challenge is getting used to using Edmodo as our main source of education. I have found that after the first week, most of my students are engaging. I'm also finding that as teachers, we have a group chat, and it's constantly going off day and night. Trying to figure things out and working together. And the group chat includes our union steward. It includes our professional development leader that puts together our professional development. We also get regular phone calls from the principal on direct ed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been very communicative, and we're kind of figuring it out together.
Right.
With the video conferencing, I have another teacher that's going to help me through that. Somebody I've worked with for years.
Yeah. Sarah, what about you? What's one big challenge right now that you're trying to figure out?
How to finish my yearbook when we're not at school.
That's got to be tough.
It's absurd. You know, having survived the events at my school 2 years ago, you know, we certainly know about making a yearbook in a pinch, but, you know, looking at not being back to school, we thought until April 15th. Now it's pushed back to May 1st, and, you know, we still have a yearbook to finish, and I still have deadlines. So my students and I are working really, really hard to get it done. And that is the biggest challenge. The teaching part is a snap. I can do that. But it's very difficult to make a yearbook when you're not at school.
Yeah. Now, putting together a yearbook, putting together a newspaper, you know, there's a lot of elements that go into it. And you have to have – everybody's got to be doing their part.
Yeah.
I want to go to the phones now. We're joined now by Carla Hernandez-Matt. She's the president of the United Teachers of Dade. Carla, thank you so much for calling in. Thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be on. Thank you for having this really important conversation.
We are hearing from teachers about some of the challenges that they're facing. What are you hearing from some of your teachers, you know, how they're adapting to this remote learning?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of mixed reviews. I know that some teachers, you know, have been using a lot of these platforms early on with their students. And so they're very acclimated and you know, a lot of these students are very independent on these things. But for the most part, you know, when you talk about pivoting on a dime, you know, no notice, 350,000 plus kids, you know, it has been quite a lift. You know, there's been a lot of communication back and forth on how we make this better, because although we were able to pivot and do it pretty well, we know that it's been with a lot of bumps on the road. You know, Ms. Chase was speaking earlier and she was talking about the concerns that she has with her kids. And I think that's probably the biggest concern that most of my colleagues have. You know, this is a county that's an urban district. We have over 10,000 kids that are homeless in our schools, and we worry about them. You know, where are they? Are they able to connect?
Do we not have a way of tracking them?
So they are. Everyone is trying to track them. So all teachers are trying to make sure they engage with students. But there are some students that have not connected and have not engaged. You know, the district is trying to track how many students are logging on to the portal. But then that leads to another question, right? What if you don't have a device? And although the district has done a very good job at, you know, checking out almost 60,000 laptops to date, we know that there are still a lot of our students that do not have these devices. They have connectivity, and so that creates an issue on its own.
Right.
One of the things that we also are very cognizant of, I'm a special education teacher. I know that there are students with disabilities that cannot access these platforms either.
Right.
Be it
right.
That they have a physical disability or a cognitive disability, and we can't leave those behind. We can't forget our students with disabilities. We can't neglect kids that lived in impoverished areas. And so, really, I think that's our biggest concern as educators. Is how this is going to impact and widen the achievement gap.
And the other thing too, Carla, is, you know, because a little while ago we heard Jessica say, when things get back to normal, we don't know when that's going to happen. How long are teachers ready to have to do this, to have to teach like this?
Right. Well, that's it, right? That's the question that everybody has right now. How long is this going to take? You know, at the end of the day, we want everybody to be safe. So we're going to continue to do distance learning and provide our community with the support as long as we're being asked to stay sheltered, because we need to stay in our houses, not to spread the virus.
Right.
But when this is all said and done, you know, or if it takes an even more extensive period than May 1st, which in all actuality, it probably will. I mean, let's be realistic here. We know that there are other states that have already said we're finishing the school year out this way. You know, our teachers, that's the brilliance of our educators. You know, they're so resilient and they pivot and they make things work. And they, you know, they want to make sure that they're at least that mental, emotional support of connecting with students, so that students feel like there's something in their life is normal.
Right.
Something about seeing their peers, about seeing their teachers on screens is something that's helping them have that human connection.
Carla Hernandez-Matz, president of the United Teachers of Dade. Carla, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You know what, Jessica, I wanted to ask you, have the districts talked about summer courses? Will they probably have to just stay online? Have they started talking about possibly what's going to happen in August?
Yes, there's been some conversation. So obviously this is a touch and go situation that's changing on a daily basis. The State Department of Education under Governor DeSantis and Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran yesterday and the day before spoke with school districts and told them that it was his strong recommendation that they extend the closures through at least May 1st. Before that, it had been through April 15th. The Florida Constitution gives school boards the authority to make decisions about their school districts, which is why it's a strong recommendation. So those decisions are really in the hands of local officials. And I have seen some chatter from teachers and parents being frustrated that school districts haven't just come out yet and said, this is going to be the reality for the rest of the school year and made that official because, you know, I've seen some of them make the argument that, you know, it could be more helpful for students to just know that and not feel like they're wondering, am I going to go back to school? If they can have a sense of like, okay, this is the period of time we're going to be doing this. Some superintendents, including Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie and Monroe County School Superintendent Mark Porter, have said pretty bluntly, we expect that this will be the reality through the end of this school year and potentially even longer, possibly into the fall. But those decisions certainly haven't been made definitively yet.
We're talking with WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman, also with Stephen Bax, history teacher at Hialeah Gardens High School, and Sarah Lerner, teacher and advisor at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. We'll be back to this conversation in a moment. First, we want to share with you a personal story of a parent remote working, and many are trying to figure out how to balance all of this, if it's even possible. WLRN reporter Nadege Green is a single mom of two boys, and she takes us into her home with her sons, 8-year-old Noah and 6-year-old Jacob.
Day one of teaching from home. I do what we normally do when there's school. Get the kids up, they brush their teeth, shower, then breakfast.
Okay, that's enough syrup. That's enough syrup.
I attempted to stick to a schedule. By now, if you're a parent, you've probably seen the nice color-coded schedules floating around Facebook and Instagram, recreating school from home. 8 a.m., prepare for the day. 8:30, do some physical activity. 9 a.m., reading. 9:45, writing. Social
studies. Dedicated
hour for PE. I really tried to be that parent. First, I had to get Noah, my 8-year-old, set up with his different online programs.
Reading and math, I have to do 45 minutes.
But you have to do Mayon.
Mayon for reading, Sundog for math.
I get Noah set up on the computer, and Jacob starts his reading.
At the park, Luke rushed to the sandbox.
A couple hours in, and we're already off that color-coded chart. And apparently, their regular school schedule, too. Noah, of course, notices.
I got a language at 105. Let's see, your schedule should actually be off limits.
My 6-year-old, Jacob, is kind of okay with it, though.
Regular school is longer than home school.
Okay, well, let's take a break.
We take many breaks, like this one, because siblings learning in the same room means many arguments.
YMCA does stay at the school. Every people who go on.
And a few days in, I come to an easy realization that I am not a teacher. I love my son's teachers, and I can't replicate what they do or devote the time they normally get. I also have to work. I'm just doing the best I can. So for me, that means doing away with that color-coded schedule. We were not succeeding with that anyway. And I've been letting go of control. A little. Jacob, my youngest, is now doing some of his work before he brushes his teeth and showers, because that's how he wants to do it. This was the scene from yesterday.
Jacob, just because there's no school doesn't mean you don't have to brush your teeth. You still have to brush your teeth.
But do I have to take a shower?
Can you please get in that bathroom?
I'm gonna take a shower. I just want to brush my teeth and that's it. Please.
So today, I let him work in his pajamas. Looking back of the battles to wage and the meltdowns to deal with, I am now okay if he doesn't shower till noon. I've also let my 8-year-old take the lead and develop some peer learning. Also code for mom is on a conference call. Noah DJ'd, and his brother sang along to what is easily the elementary school turn-up song of the year. That was music and dance class. I'm lucky that my job is pretty flexible, but when there's breaking news, I have to drop everything I'm doing to get the news out to you all. In those moments, I do what all great parents do when we want our children to take us seriously and listen to us.
You might earn a pack of Pokemon cards if y'all let me finish my
can
work.
Can we get
one now?
I bribe them.
Okay. You can each get one pack of Pokemon
now.
Cards.
Now?
Do not. Hey, come back. No, you each get one pack and then you let me work, please.
Okay.
Look. Some of you might be judging, but the bribe worked. I got the news done, and the kids gave me the space to do it. The super organized, color-coded schedule might work for some families. Other families might need to take a more laid-back approach. I'm team, do whatever works for you and your family.
I'm Noah Green.
I'm Jacob Green.
And I'm Nadej Green in Miami.
That was WLRN's Nadej Green. You can read her full story by going to WLRN.org. To her and to all the parents, a big applause. You deserve it. Anyway, parents, we want to hear from you. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Tell us how life has changed for you. More from our teacher panel right after this. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, we are talking with WLRN education reporter Jessica Bakeman. Stephen Bax is a teacher at Hialeah Gardens High School, and Sarah Lerner is a teacher and advisor at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. And, you know, we're talking about this experience of remote learning, what it's like now with students not in school. They're still learning, though. They got to do it from home. And we just heard a great piece from Nadej Green. So now parents are not just parenting, they are now also helping teach as well. They're not teachers, but they got to do some part. They got to take their part to make sure the kids are doing their job. We'd love to hear from you. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial and share with us your story, what it's like. You can also reach us by email, sundial@wlrnnews.org. We heard from some of you already, like Israel Pius Jr. He says this: as far as schooling, K-12 schools should shift to year-round terms as soon as possible, with shorter breaks throughout, and be prepared for more disruptions to come. Our school systems must become more flexible and creative to support students in this new normal. I hope more leaders come into this realization sooner rather than later. There's no better time to plan for the future than the present. Jessica, has there ever been a discussion of this idea of, year-round terms, I guess, instead of having shorter breaks, instead of what we have right now?
Well, certainly that conversation has happened on the federal level, and there are some charter schools or private schools that have different schedules where they have a longer school year and they have different breaks during the year. But to my knowledge, that conversation hasn't been had seriously at the state level in Tallahassee, where it would mean, you know, that kind of a full scale change for, you know, public schools throughout Florida.
Sarah, what do you think about the listener's comments there and that idea? Is that a good idea or no?
I don't think it is, because even if we're on year-round school, something will still happen that will be disruptive to the learning and the teaching. I think the system we have is fine. I like having my summer off. I like having a winter break and a spring break and a short distance from my students and my life as Mrs. Lerner, where in my off time I can be mom and a wife and have my my free time and my freedom to do as I choose. I don't think year-round school will solve any of the problems.
Stephen, I wanted your thoughts on this too, but also, what do you think we're going to learn from all this?
Well, I think we're going to learn to have a plan set in place, just like, you know, after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, a lot of schools went to set a plan in place, and that was addressed, unfortunately, too late for some. As far as year-round school goes, I'm not a fan. My son's a junior in high school, and he was supposed to do an engineering internship paid this summer. And when they do that internship, they have an opportunity for first interview after college. That's kind of in jeopardy now, but a lot of our kids do internships over the summer. I personally, my wife passed away a little over a year ago, but she was a teacher as well. And we took summer to travel. We'd spend the summer in Peru with her family. When she was ill, we spent the summer in New York for treatment. But it's a great amount of family time because during the school year, I'm a golf coach, I'm a water polo coach, and I teach 300 students. You're talking about 60-hour work weeks. That summer is a good time to de-stress. And sometimes we end up teaching summer school anyway for a little extra income or have second jobs at that time.
Yeah, and
I would miss summers.
Stephen, and I am so sorry for your loss. Something interesting about your situation, and Sarah, you're a parent too, but Stephen, you got two kids, so
yes.
You're a teacher and you're also a parent teaching. And so this is a lot of extra. I mean, we heard Nadez, she's got her job and she's got her two boys. She's got a bribe from time to time. But, you know, how do you balance the two? Because, you know, it's you have those office hours, but your kids have their needs. And how do you do that?
Well, I am lucky in that my late wife's mother is very involved. She keeps bringing over dinner every night. So that's a big help. I do cook at home as well. We just take turns on the computer. One of them's more of a morning person, and my high schooler, he's been getting up and doing some of it in the morning. My youngest one, not so much. He likes to do it later in the day, and we adjust our schedules accordingly.
Yeah.
I have to be on the computer from 10 to 1, but we do have two computers. So we can switch back and forth that way.
It's I'm not a parent. It's just interesting to me to say you have office hours for your own kids. That's this very alien idea to me. Again, we're talking about this new reality we're living in that with schools shut down, students now are distance learning. They're learning from home. Teachers still have to communicate with those students. And then also parents now have an extra duty. What's it like for you, especially we'd love to hear from teachers how you're doing this and, you know, what are the challenges you're facing? You can call in 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can also find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Sarah, for you, you're a parent. How do you find the balance there?
My kids are a little bit younger than Stephen's. My son is in eighth grade and my daughter is in fifth. Thankfully, we have computers. My husband has been working from home as long as the kids and I have been home. So he and I split the dining room table, and my son takes the laptop to work in his room, and my daughter takes my laptop and is kind of all over the place. But it's hard. While I'm on the phone with you, my son just walked in and I shooed him away so that I could finish the call. you know, I'm trying to help them log on to Zoom and help my son with his Spanish and help my daughter with, you know, whatever elementary stuff she needs. And I'm an English teacher and helping with, and I mean, I speak Spanish, but helping with math and science and some of these other subjects that I haven't taken in over 20 years is challenging. This is my 18th year of teaching. And this, with the exception of the 2018 school year, this is the most challenging because I'm a mom, I'm a school teacher, and now I'm a homeschool teacher trying to balance all of that. And my husband is here. He's not a teacher, and he's on conference calls at the same time that I'm across the table trying to do Zoom calls and enter grades and answer emails. And, you know, we're all kind of putting out fires at the same time.
when, you know, and again, we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know how long this is going to keep going. But Sarah, what's the plan if you got to go into the summer and if you got to go into the fall and still do this?
Do you mean my plan or the district's plan?
I mean, the district's plan of whatever you've heard. But I mean, you personally, how are you going to adapt?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty adaptable and pretty flexible. I have heard nothing communicated from the district about this going past what is now May 1st. So if there are plans for the summer and beyond, that has not been communicated to us. I will, if this is the way it is for the rest of the school year, then my children and I will continue on as we are, and I will help my students. My heart breaks for my seniors because I teach senior English, and you know that they're losing out, potentially losing out on prom and what happens with graduation. And they keep asking me if I've heard anything about those two, you know, life milestones. And unfortunately, I haven't, and I don't have answers for them. But you know, I lived this high school life for 16 of my 18 years of teaching, and right. To watch this senior class potentially lose those two big things is heartbreaking.
Stephen, one of the other things too is, you know, sometimes when you go into the summer, some students fall behind, you know, the students, yes, especially who don't have access to, you know, resources, activities and certain types of things they can do in the summer. They lose some of the stuff they gained one term, and then they got to catch up in the fall. What's the fear here? If this goes on for a while, a lot of students might fall behind. How do you prevent that?
Well, there is going to be a learning curve, of course, using the technology, both on the teachers and the students' side. So they are going to fall a little bit behind. I think we will catch up. We'll adjust to the current situation, and we'll pick up the pieces from there. The fact is, all of us, you know, are in the same mode pretty much across the country. So it's not like they're falling behind their peers, because they're all going to be in the same position when we get back to school. So we're going to have to do some review.
Yeah,
we're going to have to go back and see what they're missing and pick up the pieces from there. If it adds a year to education, I don't think that's such a horrible thing. I hope it doesn't go that long, obviously. But we'll find a way. We'll find a way to get around it.
We'll have to wait and see on that one. Stephen Bax, again, is a history teacher at Hialeah Gardens High School, and Sarah Lerner, an English and journalism teacher and yearbook advisor at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I'm going to let both of you go. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And because I know you got class, you got your students and you got your kids. So get busy.
Thank you.
All right, Jessica. The other thing, too, with the district is, I mean, all these big events now canceled, you know, proms, graduation. How are the school districts handling graduation?
So the school districts have not made the official announcement yet that graduations will be canceled. I can't imagine them holding graduations. I think that announcement is imminent. And I've heard both Superintendent Alberto Carvalho in Miami-Dade and Superintendent Runcie in Broward County call that heartbreaking for seniors. Obviously, Sarah also mentioned prom. Those are really important events in students' lives, and I do think there will be a lot of pain and anxiety around that. But obviously, we know that we can't have hundreds or thousands of people in the same room to make sure that we are as safe as possible and try to keep, you know, to flatten the curve for what the tension will be on the healthcare system trying to deal with this pandemic. So we'll find out soon, but I would think that it's going to be bad news from the perspective of students who are really looking forward to those events.
And, you know, just for you as the education reporter, you know, what are some of the other things right now that you're looking into? As again, the term is ending, we're going into the summer, and this is our reality.
Well, you know, some of the like detail things that teachers are still wondering about and trying to get some answers on is how taking attendance should work or is going to work, how recording grades should work. There has been some guidance from school districts and from the state on those things, but it's not totally clear how realistic that is. You know, Sarah mentioned that in Broward, they're finishing up the third quarter, and that's pretty much where all the school districts are. Either they've just started the fourth quarter, or they're finishing up the third. And so in that case, a lot of the teachers already had enough grades in their grade book for the quarter. And so they kind of were able to just sort of skate, you know, not really skate, but give students some time to get adjusted to the new reality without, you know, worrying about, am I going to get a bad grade on something? But going into the fourth quarter, they're going to need grades for the fourth quarter. So that's one of the big pieces of anxiety that's on people's minds right now. Like, what are students going to learn in that last quarter? How are they going to be graded? And continuing anxiety about whether students have devices, whether they have internet connectivity, and whether there are students who are just not going to be able to be served this way. You know, a lot of students with special needs get like one-on-one attention at school, and that's just not going to be possible for the time being.
Yeah, we heard that from a couple of people today, definitely. We've been listening to WLRN's education reporter, Jessica Bakeman. Jessica, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lewis.
And earlier again, we heard from Stephen Bax from Hialeah Gardens High School and Sarah Lerner from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And again, if you're a teacher or parent, share your experience with us, you know, what this has been like. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial on Facebook or Twitter. Well, still to come, how are you keeping tabs on what's happening culturally in your neighborhood? A chat with the Nootropic next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, you know, staying in touch with family and friends, easy to do these days, right, with social media. But keeping tabs on what's going on in your community and in your local art scene, getting a little more difficult. With the shrinking of local journalism and the absence of community newspapers, a lot of interesting things happening in our neighborhoods are going unnoticed. The Nootropic is focused on the hyper-local stories and the events happening in Miami-Dade County. And the daily newsletter is run by Lance Dixon, and the pandemic hasn't stopped his work. It's changed it a little bit, but he's still busy. Lance joins us now via Skype. Lance, great to have you back.
Yeah, great to be here, Lewis.
You know, you're the guy who also has to be out about, you got to know the pulse of the city, because I'm depending on you to tell me what's going on. You're helping me stay in touch. But so many things have shut down. So how's that changed your life and the way you're doing your job?
Yeah, I mean, the month of March was definitely just a big shift from what we're used to. I mean, we were planning to host some events, you know, just personally that we were going to throw in the city to bring people together. Bringing people together is a big part of what we do. We try to engage those curious locals and those folks who are interested in, whether it's on the civic end, whether it's on the, you know, just engaging with culture and local art and music and things like that. And all of that sort of dissipated, at least on an in-person level.
And, you know, look, I mean, it's engaging, it's bringing people together, talking about a lot of different events. But now you're kind of shifting. I noticed a little bit, especially with the newsletter, is more of a, you know, kind of an information sort of dump. You're giving people all this information, reminding them of what they need to know and what they need to do in these times.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've always tried to kind of toe the line of, you know, providing people that relevant information on what's happening on a sort of civic level, what's happening with their local government, what's happening with different ins and outs and various city halls and town halls around the county, but also, you know, highlighting local business people, highlighting things that are happening around town and things of that nature. And now we've kind of had to restructure that balance, because while people definitely still want to know where those online engagements are and find those different ways to connect virtually, they also are, you know, just inundated with a bunch of information from all over the place. And we kind of wanted to step up on the other aspect of what we do and say, hey, how can we distill all of this information that we would normally kind of dole out in bits and pieces, but now, you know, we really want to concentrate it and make it as plain for folks as we can.
You know, the newsletter has a huge following, and I'm wondering what you've heard from some of your subscribers about, you know, life now in South Florida and what it's like for them lately, and you know, what they're missing, but what they're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, from our readers, from our partners, from folks who reach out to us with story ideas and things of that nature, everybody, it's kind of a balance between sort of anxiety that they're feeling, as a lot of people, you know, obviously as you and several other news outlets have reported here locally, are stepping into new roles. They're caretakers, they're part-time teachers, they're balancing all these things that they might not have had to do before. So they're anxious about that and you know, just constantly seeing the latest updates and the news and wondering how to make sense of it all. But then for other folks who might be engaged in that stuff and able to compartmentalize it a little bit better, they're also wondering, okay, now I'm feeling antsy. I have a little bit more free time than I anticipated. So how can I help? How can I get involved? How can I kind of do the things that, you know, I can't go to like a trash cleanup if I'm somebody who's very concerned about the environment. I can't organize a bunch of people together to talk about relevant issues in the same way that I could before at a, you know, at a local neighborhood center or a park or something like that. So how can I channel that energy into something that's helpful for my community and for my neighbors?
You know, one of the things that I have noticed is the ingenuity and the creativity people have. You're, you know, being stuck at home, they're finding interesting ways of entertaining themselves and each other. But what are some of the things that you've seen locally? Like some of these different clubs and groups around town used to having events, but they're still trying to find a way to connect with people. What are they doing? And what are some of the interesting things that you've seen that are happening?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think there's been a lot of really swift and innovative work. One example for sure is the Rhythm Foundation. They're an organization that puts together a lot of concerts and live music events and programming and things like that in North Beach and some other parts of town. And I think within a couple of days of things getting much more significant here in South Florida, they said, hey, you know, we had this concert that was coming up. Instead of just outright canceling it, we're going to work with the artist who was Afro Beta and that band. And we're going to say, hey, you know what? You guys can go to an empty band show. We'll get our video equipment there and we'll just stream it out to the masses and let them enjoy that. And I think of a group also like Oh Miami, you know, their annual poetry festival happens every year in April. And they pretty swiftly said, hey, you know, we can't have these in-person events that we're used to doing. And they just completely in like a sort of unique way just moved everything online. And they're rolling out that programming this week and moving forward. So a lot of people are taking some really innovative approaches, whether that's, you know, mom and pop dance studios or yoga instructors or gyms or some of those bigger cultural institutions.
Did I see? All right, so I've seen some places they have now online karaoke, so you could still get your karaoke fix. What also? What digital disco? What is that?
Yeah, so last weekend there's this bar in Wynwood called Minnie's Disco, and there's another organization called Peach Room that does these sort of pop-up disco events at different bars and clubs around town. And so they kind of brought their forces together and just had a disco party that they streamed through Instagram Live. And, you know, you could tune in whenever you wanted to, dance, enjoy, you know, to make a beverage of your choosing from the comfort of your home and kind of have a party.
What about, you know what? I also noticed like museums and galleries are also trying to find ways to connect with people.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, everyone from museums on college campuses like University of Miami and FIU to the Museum of Contemporary Art up in North Miami, the Bass, the PAM. I mean, so many of these places are saying, you know, hey, we have this, you know, we have these archives of videos. We have these different ways to approach this from a technological standpoint. So how can we just, you know, shift that really quickly and recognize, you know what, this artist is still here. These artists are still willing to engage one way or another, even if that's at a distance. So we want to still allow people to get that cultural connection. And honestly, you know, just pass the time in some cases. I mean, I think that if you can give a kid a sort of virtual tour of the Vizcaya or something like that, as they're like taking a break from their schoolwork or something like that, it's a nice kind of way to change up the pace of the day, I think, for folks.
All right. You got to give me my fix here and help me, you know, prepare for the weekend. What's some stuff going on this weekend that, you know, because I'm getting bored being stuck in my apartment. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you scroll through most of most cultural kind of institutions, they're posting about the different programming that they have, whether it's in their stories or different posts like that. There's drag shows that are happening. Some of the folks like Carla Croqueta is a really big one who she does a lot of shows through her Instagram Live and kind of through those channels. You know, you can also, I think a lot of folks are shifting if they're local DJs that play at different bars, they're doing online sets through Instagram Live. So you can seek some of those out. And then also, you know, if you just kind of want to enjoy your time at home, but still want a little taste of your favorite cocktail or something like that, there's been a lot of guides from different local sources to put those together at home. So you don't have to worry about missing that too much.
Lance Dixon is the director of the New Tropic, and we're going to have more information about how to sign up for that newsletter by going to our social media at WLRN Sundial. Keeps you updated on everything that's happening even though it's all shut down, there's still stuff happening. Lance, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
All right, stay safe and have a great weekend. Well, that's our program for this Wednesday, April 1st. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to be speaking with Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez. Governor Ron DeSantis established an executive order requiring people across South Florida to stay at home except for necessary services. What about the entire state? We're going to get the latest on that tomorrow. Plus, how are workers' rights being impacted by COVID-19? What can businesses do to protect themselves? A panel conversation about labor law during the coronavirus pandemic, and we want to hear from you. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Again, in all these times, just a reminder, social distancing. You know, I only go out once in a while, but I'm seeing people. Most people are doing a great job. Some, I don't know what it is. You don't care. You don't think this is real, but just be respectful a little bit. And let's just take care of ourselves, because as we've heard the president say, we're about to enter some really tough weeks. So remember, wash your hands a lot, protect yourselves, protect each other. And you can always find us on social media at WLRN Sundial and tell us what you're doing and how you're doing. And maybe we'll make it a segment for the show. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.